The following podcast is provided to you free, as is all our content, at drhoffman.com. If you'd like to listen, help support Intelligent Medicine, and get great values by shopping at our supplement store, go to drhoffman.com and click on Shop, then click on the store. Thanks, and enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today it's time for Q&A with Layla, which is our weekly feature in which we answer your questions. I team up with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin, who is a registered dietitian. She also has earned a master's degree in nutrition. Hello, Layla. How are you?
Great, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. Just the other day, I noticed another three initials past your name. Did you take another certification?
No, they've always been there.
Okay. Well, you've got more initials after your name than I do. I'm jealous.
Oh, no.
What is the latter? So you're
MSRD, CDN. CDN is Certified Dietitian or Certified Nutritionist.
Uh-huh.
Really, Certified Dietitian Nutritionist. That's a certification with the state of New York.
Which means you're legit.
Yeah. I'm legit.
Okay.
I'm legit.
That's good,
because you wouldn't have hired me.
I wouldn't waste my time a day with you, you know, and waste our listeners' time if you weren't legit. So, okay. So that's, we know you're legit. All right. But the letters, you know, it's always reassuring to have more letters after your name. All right. So we're going to be answering questions in just a moment. But first, you know, I just have to comment on a huge story that was issued, I guess it was on Labor Day, so lots of people kind of relaxing at home and reading the paper. Uh-huh. And in the New York Times, an article by Anahad O'Connor, one of their science correspondents, a call for a low-carb diet that embraces fat. Perish the thought. You know, because something we've been talking about for what? How many, like 20 years or so? And, you know, the lead paragraph in the story says, people who avoid carbohydrates and eat more fat, even saturated fat, lose more body fat and have fewer cardiovascular risks than people who follow the low-fat diet that health authorities have favored for decades, a major new study shows.
Hurrah! The truth is finally out.
Yeah.
Actually, it's been out over and over and over again, but it's coming out even more and more. So it's snowballing.
Yeah, you know,
finally.
It's very, very gratifying because, you know, among the things that, you know, we talk about, there are many themes where many years ago, you know, you and I, we departed from conventional nutrition and even conventional medicine in recommending certain things. And now, decades later, the scientific evidence is vindicating us. And I'm very, very pleased to see this.
Yes, it's very, very gratifying, finally. And yes, folks, you have to eat fat to lose fat. That's right. That's what we said.
And you know what's you know what's interesting about this study? And I looked at the study, and what's interesting about this study is that it was a couple of things. One, it was a racially diverse group of 150 men and women, mm-hmm. which is unusual because often they will have like one race, they'll study Hispanics, or they'll study just Caucasians, or they'll just study men or just women. And this is a heterogeneous group, so, you know, different types of people. And it wasn't necessarily people who were at high risk for heart disease. It was just like ordinary folks. Mm-hmm. In other words, obese folks. And actually, they didn't even tell them to go on a diet. They just said, here's how to eat. And I think that's the essence of the low-carb diet. It's not so much like, oh, you've got to like weigh your portions and restrict it. It's like, don't eat certain things. Don't eat a lot of pasta and bread, and don't eat, you know, a lot
right.
of sugary foods,
right.
and don't drink fruit juice, and cut your carbs. That is important. But, you know, eat whatever you want. And it turned out that it seemed to work better that way rather than people weighing and measuring and all that, you know, stuff that discourages people when they diet.
It discourages them. They become obsessed. Then they become unhappy. It just doesn't work.
Yeah. Right. So it took a year, and this is what they found. People in the low-carbohydrate group had lost about 8 pounds, and not with a calorically restricted diet, but they just switched the type of food that they ate, which was more on average than those in the low-fat group. So they did better than the low-fat group. And And this is where the surprise was, because a lot of people said, oh, you know, you follow this kind of diet, fine, you may lose weight, but it's artificial. You're going to die because your cholesterol is going to skyrocket. You're going to get all kinds of heart problems with this type of diet. It's bad. But actually what happened, they had significantly greater reductions in body fat than the low-fat group. They had improvements in lean muscle mass, and they had improvements in their cardiovascular parameters. They were less likely to be pre-diabetic. They had better cholesterols. The HDLs were higher. Their LDLs were lower. Their triglycerides were lower. And also, in losing weight, the ones on the low-fat diet, they lost a lot of muscle. They lost some weight, but they lost, you know, some fat and some muscle. And the ones on the higher protein diet, they lost less muscle and more fat.
Yeah, and you know, this has to go out as a little bit of a warning, especially to older people who are still married to a low-fat diet. Because they're losing muscle, they now have to be concerned about sarcopenia.
Yes.
So it is not the way to go. I mean, there are so many people, some of our older patients are coming, well, I don't eat eggs because of the cholesterol, and my doctor told me not to use butter and not to this and that, and they're becoming sarcopenic because they're in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and so. So it's really not the way to eat at all, low fat.
And it sounds like
vindicated
the,
again.
Yeah, and it sounds like the kind of diet that was recommended is similar to a diet that we recommend here.
Yeah.
They told people that they could have eggs for breakfast, tuna salad for lunch, some kind of protein for dinner. It could be red meat. So they didn't say avoid red meat. It could be chicken. It could be fish. It could be pork or tofu, and lots of vegetables, but low starch vegetables.
Right.
And it worked for them.
It did.
Yep.
And it will work for the majority of people around the world, as a matter of fact. So.
Right. So, and bear in mind, another study came out this week that suggested that any diet that you follow rigorously is going to help you lose weight. So no question if they say, well, don't eat this, don't eat that. You know, if you go to Dean Ornish and he says, don't have anything with any fat on it, just eat vegetables, you know, just have whole grains. Hey, you're going to lose some weight with that. You know, but that may be harder to comply with for some people. Some people love it. It's great. Works fine.
Well, I don't know. They're going to lose muscle.
And they may lose. They may lose. Yes, they may lose muscle.
I think there's going to be some point in their eating, you know, in that diet, that they're going to find that they're losing more muscle mass and eventually bone. And I would be worried about that. It's great to lose weight. The object is to maintain it. Anybody can lose weight, but you have to maintain it. And you have to maintain it in a healthy manner. You want to retain as much lean body mass as possible.
And incidentally, this is a good segue to remind our listeners that our clinical focus this week was dual purpose. First of all, I wanted to acknowledge the outstanding personal transformation that Hoffman Center, our dispensary manager, Grimaldi Vargas, has undergone. Uh-huh. She's really transformed her body, her life. She's gone from weak, tired, and underweight to a Spartan race contestant, gaining 22 pounds of healthy body weight. She was too skinny. And in the second part of that podcast, which is available now online, go to drhoffman.com, we talk about the benefits of whey protein. And we, you know, specifically the product that we like, which is the Thorn whey protein product, in either chocolate or vanilla. And, you know, we kind of go through the health benefits of that. And for sarcopenia, for people trying to avoid loss of muscle, you know, especially if they're dieting, sometimes people aren't taking in enough protein. Maybe they can't digest it that well. Whey protein is ideal.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So lots and lots.
Not just for athletes, but for older, very, you know, even our very elderly patients where, you know, they're just having a cup of tea and toast and not having much else, or maybe just a small bowl of bean soup or something like that during the day, it's not enough. So I always advise a whey protein smoothie. That's always a good idea to get additional protein into them at least.
Exactly. All right,
and
so let's let's turn to our questions.
Mm-hmm.
What do we got today?
Okay, we have, let's see, this comes from Maddie. Dr. Hoffman, I enjoy listening and learning so much from yourself and Layla. I recently heard from my ENT that I may have Meniere's disease. I have a 15% decrease in function with low frequency in one ear. My hearing in my ear seems to come in clear, and then at times it gets muffled. I eat a wheat-free diet, and I just recently given up all dairy. Is there anything I should do supplement-wise that you can suggest?
Okay, this is a really tough problem. Meniere's is a multiplicity of causes. Sometimes it may occur because of problems in the inner ear. I mean, people tend to think, well, it's a hearing problem. You know, you hear ringing, or you may have balance problems in the labyrinths, the semicircular canal of your ear. But actually, some doctors believe that certain types of Meniere's are in the brain, that they're due to faulty brain waves near the olfactory center of the brain.
Really?
So, yeah. So it's not just a problem with your hearing apparatus. It's actually sometimes a brain problem. And so it's complicated. You know, we want to...
It's
obviously
mostly autoimmune, though, isn't it?
It may be autoimmune in some cases. It may be allergic in some cases. It may be what's called idiopathic in other cases. It's just a wearing out of one of the senses. You know, just like your vision may blur or fade, your hearing discernment and your balance may be affected by changes that occur in the brain. So, what do we think? Well, she's on the right track exploring the influence of allergies, because there can be inner ear problems due to allergies.
Yes.
There may be other ones that she hasn't yet detected that might require some workup or some trial and error. Mm-hmm. Things that help Meniere's, well, we use ginkgo biloba. That is helpful.
Yes. Increases the circulation in the inner ear. Very, very good.
What's the other bioflavonoid that we use specifically for ear?
Lipoflavonoid,
which is specifically designed by ENTs because it seems to, some research supports the use of potent bioflavonoids. Pycnogenol would also be in that category. It might enhance circulation.
There was a recent study on pycnogenol and reducing the tinnitus associated with Meniere's. So, yeah, that's very interesting.
I would go for
a low-salt diet is often indicated,
too. Absolutely. Sometimes diuretics can help, although we're not crazy about their side effects. Another thing that might help is glutathione. Glutathione is something that is it helps the energetics of the brain. It certainly can help vision problems. It sometimes helps hearing problems. Orally, N-acetylcysteine could be a glutathione precursor, or even whey powder is a pretty good glutathione precursor because it has all the essential amino acids, which are... this is a nutrition test. Otherwise, we're going to revoke the last three initials that you got. Do you know the three amino acids that constitute glutathione? I sometimes forget.
Oh, wait. N-acetylcysteine, say it again?
The three amino acids that constitute glutathione, that are the building blocks of glutathione.
Oh, okay.
You got it right. Cysteine.
Cysteine, yeah.
Yeah, that's one.
Two G's.
That's a hint. Two G's.
Yeah,
Glutamine?
Oh, glutamine. All right, but two amino acids starting with G. Glutamine.
And
glycine.
Bingo.
No.
Yeah, you got it.
Oh,
you nailed it. Okay,
do I get to keep my CDN?
Yes, you get to. I was just doing a recertification. Okay. You got two out of three. Okay.
Yeah.
So, no, I often forget myself. So, yeah, those are plentiful in whey powder, it turns out, and they're good building blocks for glutathione, although... You know, there's nothing like intravenous glutathione for restoring eyesight and hearing.
Yeah. Okay.
So anyway, those are some possible. I mean, it's complicated. It's a difficult condition to address, and I don't promise a rose garden for every patient who comes with Meniere's. I wish I had the cure. Actually, one of the world's experts in Meniere's syndrome is located right here in New York, and his name is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. I kid you not.
The other Dr. Ronald Hoffman.
Ronald A. Hoffman.
Really?
And I frequently get sometimes patients call about ear problems, and our front desk informs them that I'm not an ear, nose, and throat doctor. And sometimes they say, that's fine, I'm looking for the holistic doctor. And sometimes they say, oh, thank you, I'll call the ear, nose, and throat doctor. And the other day I got a call saying, your Mercedes is ready. And I said, well, you know, I don't drive a Mercedes. Obviously, you know, he's doing well. So anyway, they got the wrong Dr. Hoffman on the line.
I didn't realize he specialized in Meniere's.
He's a hearing specialist, and that's one of his subspecialties is Meniere's, and he's very good. Another thing you can do for the balance issues, he's actually been one of the developers of something called,
is it an exercise?
It's
vestibular rehabilitation.
Vestibular rehabilitation, yes.
What is
VR.
It called? The Epley exercise?
That's a different thing. There's something called an Epley maneuver, which experienced ENT doctors can do, where they sort of, it's like a quick adjustment of your head where you shift rapidly, and you kind of think of these canals that are part of the hearing apparatus as being like those snow scenes, you know, where you have the Chrysler Building, the Empire State Building, yeah. or a snowman, and you shake it up and the snow moves. Well, these little particles within these semicircular canals move around, and as you age, sometimes they send the wrong signals. And sometimes an Epley maneuver, which dislodges these particles, helps to relieve vertigo. It doesn't always work, but it's, you know, sometimes worth a try. Yeah.
I think the biggest risk with Meniere's is progressive hearing loss, is it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. All right, best of luck to Maddie.
Yeah.
Do we have time for another question?
Yes, we do.
Okay. This is actually a quick one. This comes from Dina. I was wondering if hyaluronic acid is safe to use.
Is it safe to use?
But of course.
Yes, it's fine to use. The question, I think the better question is it efficacious? It's absolutely safe to use. Mm. And, you know, any time that, you know, you chew on the end of a chicken bone, you're getting hyaluronic acid, you know, or if you eat, you know, pig's feet or something like that that has cartilage in it. Not a lot of Americans do that, but it's a delicacy in certain parts of the world. And it's, you know, among our grandparents, maybe it was a delicacy, not too much savored anymore. But that's eating cartilage, and that's where you derive hyaluronic acid from the cartilage. Actually, in many products that are hyaluronic acid products, they derive the cartilage from rooster combs. You know, when they make, you know, they turn the rooster into a broiler, you know, with chicken parts, they save the rooster combs and they put it through a certain process and they derive the hyaluronic acid out of the rooster comb. And that is a source of hyaluronic acid, which is a constituent of cartilage and synovial membrane. And it's thought that that could be helpful for restoring joint problems.
Yeah, joint problems. I think it's also good for anti-aging to some degree.
Yeah, right.
For skin. It helps to hold, pardon me, it helps to hold moisture and water.
Right. And since the one of the hallmarks of aging is a loss of the connective tissue and in your face, whereupon wrinkles form and the skin sags, the idea is we can plump up the skin possibly with oral hyaluronic acid. They certainly do injections of collagen for people for cosmetic surgery purposes. So it may be plausible that hyaluronic acid works orally. And some people swear by it. They say it really is beneficial. And I think that the science on that is rather, is not conclusive. I don't think the studies have been proof positive that hyaluronic acid is beneficial for joints. Same thing with glucosamine chondroitin research. Some research points to benefits and some research suggests that it's not efficacious.
Hmm. Okay. Best of luck to Dina. We think hyaluronic acid then is okay, right?
And they even inject it. I mean, they actually use it for injections into the joints, too.
Okay. We have another question from Steve.
Yeah, we have time. We're going to go two segments. We'll take one more question, and then at conclusion of that, we'll take a break, and then we'll refer our listeners to part two of today's Q&A with Layla. But we have time for one more question.
This comes from Steve, who's taking several supplements that are recommended in a book he read. One of them is arginine. However, arginine makes my skin break out on my fingertips and surrounding the nail, surrounding the fingernails.
Wow.
Eating a lot of dairy products does this too, apparently.
Hmm. Well, it's interesting because arginine does promote viruses, in particular herpes viruses, and for the skin to break out around the fingers. I wonder what's going on with that. I really wish I could see a picture of what that looks like or examine his fingers when it happens.
Isn't there also like herpes that you could get on your finger?
Absolutely, yes.
Kind of thing, maybe that's what's going on?
Yes, and that can be very, usually it's very painful. It's not just a little bit of a irritation. It's pretty painful.
Hmm.
So, you know, I don't precisely know what's happening there. You know, could it be an allergy to dairy with that atypical manifestation? Maybe.
Maybe.
I mean, the other thing that happens around the fingernail beds, but this isn't necessarily with arginine, or with dairy products, it's more with lots and lots of sugar, is sometimes you'll get fungal infections around the nail beds. And it, particularly when you immerse your hands in water or chemicals for long periods of time, you may, or if you have get a bad manicure, you may get a chronic fungal infection.
That's the ultimate place to catch anything.
Yeah.
That's really the ultimate place. People don't realize, you know, you go get your mani-pedi, but you're also risking hepatitis B.
And infections and damage to the nail bed, and plus you're inhaling tons of chemicals. I feel sorry for the workers there, and they have these little cotton masks on. They think that that's what's going to protect them, and they're still breathing this stuff that, you know, goes right through the tiny, tiny mesh in the mask.
And all that acetone and everything.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Not great. Yeah. Not great. Yeah. And you put the chemicals on your skin surface, mm-hmm. and that gets into your system. But I got to say, even the most health-conscious women, you know, they have everything GMO free and organic, but they still get the mani-pedi, you know, with the chemicals.
Yes, you get the mani-pedi,
right.
Or a lot of makeup. And
right.
Ladies, we eat a lot of pounds of lipstick in
a
year,
yeah.
by the way. And some of them have been shown to contain lead.
Lead, right.
So, yeah. There's all of that.
Vanity, thy name is woman, but to some extent, man. But I got to say that I may have had like one manicure in my life. I don't know. Somebody can just go for a manicure, you'll feel great. I said, no, it looks nice, but then, not worth it.
Yeah. So I would recommend Steve either stop taking arginine, or if it is related to a herpes breakout, to maybe counterbalance it with some lysine.
Yes.
Or something.
Yep.
And certainly don't eat dairy if you believe it's causing the breakouts.
Right.
As well. So.
Do we get the most interesting questions here?
We do.
Some really curveball questions.
Yeah, we have more coming up, as a matter of fact.
Good. Give us a quick preview of what we got.
Fetal myristoliate is in a lot of joint formulas.
Okay, CMO.
How effective is it with arthritis?
Okay. So we'll
fetal myristoliate.
Okay, what you just did is a tease. We're going to tease to part two of today's discussion with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. It's Q&A with Layla, and we'll rejoin with more questions in just a moment. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.